The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decision.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
Hey, welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth show. I'm John Walker, sitting in for Steve Cordasco this week, and I'm really excited to be joining you this week. Have a fun topic that we're going to discuss. And momentarily, I'll be introducing two of my fine colleagues here from Cordasco Financial Network. One of the things you may not know, whether you work with us or not, is that music is a big part of the culture of our team here at Cordasco. Whether we are fans of music, whether we are musicians ourselves, or whether it's just our Friday afternoon pre-COVID DJ parties, it really resonates with pretty much everyone on the team. And it's something that we enjoy together in our morning meetings and at the end of the day. And so you may have seen last week, big news breaking around Bob Dylan. So whether you're a fan of his music or not, you most likely know who Bob Dylan is, one of the most prolific singer-songwriters in music history, certainly done very well commercially and successfully, has won a Nobel Prize for poetry. So he is certainly a well-known figure. And he did something that was a bit unexpected and sold the rights to his music catalog for a significant amount of money. So being fans of the music ourselves, we started thinking as a team that there's something to this. What's the rationale for doing this? And frankly, it has real life application for many of you listening. We're excited to talk about it, not only to share our passion and love for the music, but also to talk about financially why this makes sense. And in fact, it makes sense for all parties involved. So we're going to get into that a little bit and talk about how the lessons learned from this may apply to you and to your wallet. So let me invite in to join me two of my great colleagues who are also fans of music and share my love for it. You may remember and certainly know my good buddy, Tim Joseph, who is another advisor and CPA at Cordasco. Tim, welcome to the program.
John, thank you.
And really excited to have Larry Shaw, one of my good buddies and one of our other fellow advisors and part of our investment team here at Cordasco. Larry not only is a fan of music, but also a musician himself and still plays the guitar and is a student of the Berklee School of Music. So Larry, welcome to the show today.
Thanks for having me on, John.
Yeah, we're thrilled to get into this. So it certainly shook the music community and was a big deal when an artist of the scope of Bob Dylan goes out and sells the rights to his royalties. And let me be very clear, he didn't actually sell his music or lose artistic control of the music, but he did monetize over 600 songs that he has written throughout his career. So Larry, I'm a huge Beatles fan, as you know, and the first recollection I have of a major news story like this with a music catalog actually involved the Beatles, right? And Paul McCartney at the time suggesting to his buddy Michael Jackson that he should start thinking about buying the publishing rights to music, that was a lucrative business to get into. And then subsequently finding that his buddy Michael Jackson outbid him for the rights to the Beatles music, right? Plucked it right out from under him and he lost control for a period of time to the rights to the music that he wrote. That's the first one in big memory. And it was a major dollar transaction, upwards of $40, $50 million at the time. And I believe it was in the 80s. So that was a significant amount of money. But this is not the first, nor will it likely be the last case of artists monetizing their music. Take us through a little trip down memory lane. There's some other really notable ones that we can mention.
There are, to give a little detail into the Michael Jackson, Paul McCartney situation. This occurred back when they were recording the song Say, Say, Say. I think that's right around when Paul McCartney found out that Michael had the rights to his music. He bought them back in 1985 for $47 million. And 10 years later, sold half of the publishing rights for $95 million to Sony. So you can see there was a big upswing in the value of rights to music and the publishing tied to that. It goes way back. In 1955, Chuck Berry was getting jerked around by Chess Records. Musicians historically have been on the bottom side of the music deals. Things changed. Musicians have decided to take hold of their output, their creativity, and monetize it to themselves now instead of to the record companies. Back when David Bowie issued his bonds back in 97, I think it was, it set off a trend of Ashford and Simpson, the Isley Brothers, and Stevie Nicks followed suit. So there was a trend there of people trying to benefit themselves instead of having their managers and the record companies take over for them. There was an interesting development right around that time, something that we weren't quite sure what was going to turn into, but it's called the internet. There's a gentleman named Todd Rundgren, a local Philadelphia guy, became one of the pioneers of self-producing his own music, selling his own music, and becoming his own total business through the internet. And that's become a real process for what musicians are doing today, especially in the environment we're in with people not being able to tour at this point. Nowadays, with what Bob Dylan's doing with his library, there's a number of other people who've come up and said that they'd like to do the same thing. Artists like Dolly Parton, David Crosby, just to name a few. We're going to see a real trend come down because a lot of the dollars and cents add up. People are saying, well, what am I going to hold out for? There's a lot of financial reasons, the dollars and cents. But also, there's another view of Wall Street. What are they looking at this for? Could this be the beginning of another type of monetization of a commodity that we haven't seen yet? Wall Street has taken gas and oil companies and put master limited partnerships together. There's a lot of ETFs that are thrown out by mutual fund companies that are designed to provide non-correlated assets for the investment world. What if the cash flow from catalog music can become monetized into a master limited partnership where the cash flow comes out to the shareholders? What if there's so much monetized music now, they start putting ETFs together? It could become an alternative asset in the investment world. I might be thinking a little too far ahead, but you never know how these things are going to turn out.
I think that's a great point, right? If you're looking at buying a portfolio of copyrights that have been cranking out income over long periods of time for artists of the ilk of a Dolly Parton and a Bob Dylan that have just constantly in the sphere, people are always listening to their music, then volatility is relatively low, right? The assets are long-lived, they're not correlated to the stock market, and in a basically zero-rate environment, which we've been in for quite some time and looks like we'll be in for some time in the future, investors are chasing returns. So maybe this is some new type of investment vehicle we'll have to keep our eye on.
One of the key features of this is that the bankers who are putting these deals together are very comfortable after modeling the cash flows that these catalogs provide. Take some of the volatility out. Bond yields are the lowest we've ever seen. Stock valuations can be considered, you know, markets the highest it's ever been. This could be a middle-of-the-road cash flow type of investment monetized by Wall Street at some point in the future. A lot of times, these types of investments are so good, the hedge funds and private equities keep it to themselves. Why share it if it's that good?
A great example of the constant innovation and the constant seeking of new streams of revenue, new ways to make money. It's a something for us to keep our eye on. It was many, many years ago, probably late 90s, maybe, where another very famous musician, David Bowie, was at the forefront of doing this. And in fact, they came up with a great little moniker for them of Bowie Bonds, right? Where he took the royalties and the future income from his music and actually kind of took them to Wall Street and said, we can issue these because they are guaranteed to pay a certain amount of interest.
It was a unique concept back then. Wall Street has a tendency to want to always find a different asset class that's not necessarily going to be correlated to the overall markets. And And they were looking at the numbers behind David Bowie's cash flow from his music portfolio. They came up with the idea of issuing a bond issue, 10-year bond, based on the cash flow from the music of his that was being published and played on the radio and commercials. They were able to put $55 million bond portfolio of a 10-year bond yielding 7.9% together that would benefit Mr. Bowie. It worked out very well for him.
Yeah, imagine that, being able to get a 10-year bond paying 7.9%. Tim, do you think that would be attractive these days?
Oh, I can imagine what the bond price would be on that now.
Nowadays, right? So Prudential and Bowie worked together. They paid him $55 million to issue these bonds. And so he wins and their client base wins by being able to get in on a 10-year issue paying 7.9%. What a win, right? That would be tremendous. But unfortunately, the industry changed underneath their feet shortly after these were issued, right? Because of folks like Napster and other illegal MP3 file sharing companies, right? They kind of changed the music business's model. And then it was further shifted by the iTunes and Pandora and Spotify's of the world, which has led us to what we're seeing today with Dylan and the monetization of the residuals of the revenue, the streaming revenue off of an artist's music. So in this case, what we come to understand is that essentially Bob Dylan has taken the future royalty income of his existing song catalog and taken it in advance as a lump sum. So it seems like they paid maybe 5 to 6 times the annual book value of his revenue, right? So depending which article you read, it's somewhere to the tune of in excess of $300 million all in one lump sum. And it begs the question, why would you do that? I'd imagine that Bob Dylan's already fabulously wealthy. If you do that math, is taking in somewhere to the tune of $40 to $50 million a year in revenue from his music. So, Tim, there's a real fundamental reason why he may want to do this, particularly this year.
This is a topic that has definitely shaken the music industry. You know, when you refer to a CPA to look over the terms and the deal of this agreement, you have to think that taxes were a consideration during his decision. Now, I wouldn't say it's completely why this decision was made, but it certainly has tax ramifications that are changing as if he did not do something versus doing this right now. For example, the $300 million lump sum will be considered a capital gain in his case for tax treatment. Now, as we all know, capital gain taxes are much more favorable than typical ordinary income tax rates that currently go up to 37%. In his case, certainly 37%. He has had the ability here to change the rate of tax that he will have to pay on future streams. Instead of paying the highest rate, he'll be subject to a 20% capital gain rate. So certainly a significant tax savings. However, on the flip side, it raises a more interesting topic because the timing of this deal is somewhat interesting. Now we know what the election outcome has, and we know that Joe Biden's proposals during his campaign have mentioned the possibility of finding ways to get additional revenue streams and raising taxes. Well, two of those are really important in this case. Number one, he proposed capital gains in the future to potentially be considered ordinary income tax rates at 37% or so for income if it's over $1 million. Okay, so that would certainly apply to Bob Dylan if he didn't do this in the future. And that tax law change, that would certainly apply to him. So maybe he won out on that if that were to happen. However, and more materially, one of the other proposals that Joe Biden mentioned was doing away with the step up in basis on your assets to fair market value at date of death upon inheriting his family or his heirs inheriting his legacy someday. It poses a very interesting question because if Joe Biden's plan were to be incorporated and not get a step up, that would have a significant impact on Dylan's estate someday.
In the immediate term, the thought process is likely, I am paying 37% taxes, although I'm sure he's got a great accountant and he's probably doing everything possible to reduce his tax exposure on this income. Regardless, it's probably pretty hard to hide $50 million in income that's coming directly from your music. So he might be paying 37% on that. So in the immediate term, taking it as a lump sum and getting it treated as a capital gain, he's likely reducing his future tax exposure by upwards of 17%, potentially even more if those upper tax brackets go up if the tax law changes. He's reducing his taxable liability for the future and taking all the income at once. And so that's probably a part of this.
Collecting royalties is considered an ordinary income. So he was collecting royalties. The buyer of this acquisition will be paying royalty income on what they earn. And so he has been able to transform ordinary income to capital gain income in this case.
So that's going to save him in the short term. The other thing you're highlighting is if the proposed rule to take away the stepped up cost basis. So for everybody listening, what that means is when you pass away and your heirs inherit your estate, the assets that you own under current law are valued at the date of your death. And that becomes the future cost basis for your beneficiaries. So if you own Apple and you bought Apple and you've been holding it since the 80s and you paid $8 a share and now you have a significant multiple hundreds of thousands of dollar capital gain on that and you've just been holding it, well, when you pass away and your kids get that stock, now that capital gain is eliminated. That cost basis gets stepped up. And so you've been able to capture all that growth without ever paying taxes on the capital gain. So that's under current law. There is some talk of that maybe going away. And so, Tim, I think you're hitting the nail on the head when you have an estate of the size of what Dylan's probably is. It's probably in excess of $500 million. When you're looking at that cost basis going away, and I'm sure he's thinking about this. The man's 79 years old. He's got six kids. He's probably worth in excess of $500 million. That might have been a consideration of saying, I want to get ahead of this because I can sort of eliminate that risk to an extent now on a portion of his estate. Now, because that's not going to eliminate all of it. In good fortune of his case, it's only a portion of what he has, right? It's only a portion of his estate. I'm sure he's got many, many other things. And there's other value to even these same songs. I think, Larry, one of the other things that's important to note is that the environment that we're in likely caused this change. The music industry has changed, like many industries. And so the way royalties are gathered and treated is changing too. And so that likely, in a non-tax aspect, was also a consideration for why this happened now and why many other artists appear to be urgently exploring their options to do something like this. We mentioned with Bowie that the Napsters of the world changed the music industry. Well, now we've got Spotify and iTunes and Pandora and terrestrial radio and some of those other things, maybe Sirius being the differentiator, have changed the way artists can monetize their catalogs. And so the revenue streams are changing. And this gives, in this case, the buyer of these assets, which I believe was a hedge fund, an opportunity to negotiate differently with some of these services and making it more difficult for artists to earn income off of their music.
One of the big drivers, my understanding is, of this direction that people are taking is that with the COVID lockdowns, there's no more live music. A lot of revenue came from concert, world tours, going on the road. That's not there anymore. So the ability for some of the high-end people in business, Lady Gaga, Taylor Swift, the ability for them to monetize what they've done so far to prepare for the future and also adjust for tax liabilities, I think is a big driving force at this point.
And so for the folks listening, they're probably sitting here thinking like, well, I'm not Taylor Swift. I'm not Bob Dylan. What are you guys talking about? How does this apply to me? And I think there's a couple really key takeaways from here that we want to share that actually apply to many of you listening, if not all of you listening. So the world is changing in the music industry, right? The landscape has shifted. Maybe the landscape has shifted for you in your life. Maybe your industry has changed. If you're a business owner today, maybe you're thinking about, should I stay in my business or is now the time to maybe look at my options for a future sale or structuring some sort of exit strategy? That takes real planning. And with the tax law changes and the world changing around us, maybe that's the catalyst for what you need to look at. Maybe you own real estate. Maybe it's rental real estate. Maybe it's rental property that pays you a nice, healthy income each year. Well, with the changing world, right, with real estate being very highly sought after right now, it's a very attractive seller's market. There's high demand, low interest rates. Values are in many markets really through the roof. Maybe you need to take a look and analyze, is now the time to look at taking a lump sum for the property today versus future rental income? Which one benefits me more? And through all the different lenses we just discussed, whether it's tax, whether it's future value of money, there's lots of considerations, but this might be the time to look at it. If you're considering retirement, maybe your industry has changed. Maybe you're at the age where you didn't think you were going to retire yet, but maybe there's something available. Maybe there's a package available. Maybe it's just now time. You don't love working remotely, or you love working remotely and there's an opportunity to step back. Maybe now's the time to look at that lump sum versus pension versus whatever, right? Because the same lessons that we can take from this Bob Dylan story may apply to you in a lot of different ways. The other one that really springs to mind is, I jokingly told that Apple story, but if you have appreciated assets that you've been waiting, it might be time to have a conversation of that idea of holding them till you die so that you don't have to pay taxes. Well, that may not be an option in the future. That may be going away. So whether it's the right time or not, it's probably at minimum the right time to have a conversation about it, to think about it, to do the math, to do some of the work, to figure out what your options are. And so we're not Bob Dylan or Taylor Swift. Not many of us out there are worrying about selling a $300, $400 million music catalog. But just like them, our world has shifted a bit around us. And looking at the environment that we're in today, understanding what rules may be changing and thinking about how they may affect you is really, really important, right? And so, Tim, this is the type of work we do for the people that we help. And it's that this is what good financial planning looks like, because it's fluid. Or what was the strategy 5 years ago may be very different today because the landscape has changed. Your goal hasn't changed. Your priorities haven't maybe changed. But the world has changed around you. So we need to adjust to those changes.
Certainly, John. And there are two definites when you look at something like this. Number one is unpredictability. The future is not known. Sure, you can take guesses, you can plan around and go with what you think is the best solution at times, but there's still unpredictability and uncertainty with those decisions. And also, yes, John, things do change. Tax laws change, for example. In this case, the music industry has completely changed itself over the last 25 years in terms of delivery and the way things used to be. I know I grew up in a small town that one of the largest employers was a cassette and then a CD manufacturer in the area, employed thousands of people. That plant is no longer in business doing what it used to do. So things change and then you have to react. Estate attorneys, I'm sure, are pretty busy right now at the year end at this time of the year, for example.
I'm John Walker and you're listening to the Your Life, Your Wealth show. I'm joined by my good friends, Larry and Tim, talking about the recent Bob Dylan news of selling his music catalog and helping digest that and distill it down to how the lessons learned from that actually probably apply to you. And so we know we're not Bob Dylan. We might be fans of his music, but I don't have a $600 million music catalog to sell. But Larry, one of the things that is a takeaway from this is many folks that we work with and many of the folks listening do have appreciated assets or they have a business that they own. And so what should they be learning from this news story?
There's a lot of planning that goes into everything. And remember the five P's: prior planning prevents poor performance. Whether you're dealing with your life's work in terms of your musical production, a business that you've created, or an investment that you've held for 50 years, 40 years, there's going to be capital gains, there's going to be financial implications. And the best thing to do is look at what all your alternatives are and figure out which is the best one for you, your family, and all those involved.
And with the possibility of future changes to certain laws regarding how those are treated from a tax perspective, maybe eliminating stepped up cost basis and some other things that are on the table, it's probably critically important that those conversations start happening, that there's a little urgency around the conversation. You may not need to act just yet. and we'll talk about that. But it's really critical, right, that for those folks listening, that now is the time to start that dialogue. Tim, one of the other things that we know from a tax perspective that's a real-life application that we can take from this Bob Dylan scenario is there's a big difference between capital gains and ordinary income, right? And that's part of what may have influenced this decision.
Certainly so. In Bob Dylan's case, it was a major factor. Some folks may be in the camp that, hey, do I need to do something with it before year end, before something may change next year? I'm not necessarily convinced that that needs to be the case. I'm convinced that obviously the election results from the Senate in January in Georgia can have an impact on what we would plan for or what laws may potentially change. If one of the senators stays red and the Senate has more red folks than blue folks, then it's unlikely that we would see a lot of material change in tax next year. Also, though, if it didn't go that route and maybe ended up as a blue Senate, I don't necessarily think they would be in a rush to change tax law next year, but would rather want to wait until those 20 million folks who are out of a job right now as a result of the pandemic are back to work. And that would likely take more than just next year to do that. So I don't think immediacy is necessarily what we have to worry about right now, that year end. But certainly, in the meantime, gathering an analysis. So let's say there's a family-owned business and that the next generation working there and may actually take over the business someday or take over the ownership. Do you do that now while you're alive, or do you let things play out maybe as they are planned right now and wait till the heirs inherit the business? It's certainly something you should analyze and go through your options and understand what would happen if this happened, what would happen if it doesn't happen. That would likely help families make decisions or be able to react quickly if they had to, if things were known during next year when legislation may be voting or the following year when legislation may be up for debate in the House and Senate.
And so I think for those folks that don't own businesses, they likely have appreciated assets, whether it's investments in their portfolio that they've been using for income, whether it's real estate that they own that may be providing rental income. Understanding the potential tax changes and how that may affect them and looking at their options today, maybe before those changes potentially happen, is really critical. And I think you're right. I think that what Bob Dylan chose to do may be premature from a pure tax perspective, right? That I don't know that regardless of what happens in the Senate, regardless of who controls that legislation, there may not be a rush to make any major material changes to tax law in the midst of a global pandemic. So we may have time, but what we should absolutely do is start the conversation, because what you don't want to get caught with is the change happening and you being unprepared. We are financial planners first and foremost. Getting ahead of potential obstacles, planning for potential pitfalls is what we do. This is something that the landscape may be shifting around us when it comes to certain variables. There are other factors to consider. The pandemic world that we live in may have changed your mindset on certain things. You may be considering options you didn't before, and recognizing that and taking a look at your plan and making sure everything aligns with what your priorities are and what your objectives are is very, very important. And doing it sooner rather than later, at least knowing your options and making good preparatory steps, is the key, right? I want to thank Larry and Tim both for joining me today. And thank you, Larry, for sharing your love of music with us.
You're welcome.
And Tim, your expertise in tax and your DJ skills are always appreciated.
Thanks, John. Thank you.
And thank you all for listening and joining us today in this great conversation about how a major news story in the music industry may actually have practical implications for you. If what we've talked about today raises questions for you or has you thinking about what you might need to do with your plan, we'd love to hear from you. We love talking through these things and giving people the guidance that they need for their future planning. Please give us a call at 215-558-3500 or email us at asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfnplan.com. Thanks for listening to the Your Life, Your Wealth show. I'm John Walker, and let me take this last opportunity, in case I don't get to speak to you again, to wish you and your family a very merry holiday season.
If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discussed to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com.